This episode is brought to you by the 5-Day Money Challenge. Get your stuff together with money and increase your confidence in just 5 days. Save your seat at whitneyhanson.com/moneychallenge and join in on the fun. Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hanson, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I am finally back in Boise and I am so excited to be home. There really is no place like home when you're traveling. It feels so great to just sleep in your own bed and to see your own dog and all of that fun stuff. So I'm really, really excited to be back. Greece was absolutely amazing. It was such an incredible experience. I wouldn't change it for the world. And I really did have great intentions of getting a lot of work done when I was gone. But to be fair, I actually didn't do anything. I really didn't. I was so unproductive when it came to business that, you know, I'm a little proud of myself for being able to unplug. That's something that I struggle with. I'm not really a turn it off kind of person. So it was nice to just like chill out and not have to worry about anything. I also listened to a couple really cool audiobooks. So the first one I listened to was Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. And let me tell you, that's a really great book to listen to on the plane because you're going to crack up and look like a total crazy person on your own. So great. Awesome stuff. That was really fun. I watched a couple movies, finally watched La La Land, which was really good. I'll have to share some of my insights to that movie because I thought it was kind of inspirational for those of you that are just starting off trying to get something off the ground or even your career, whatever it might be. There was actually a lot of inspiration in that movie, so I thought that was pretty cool. And apparently I need to go on more trips because that's when I get notified of all of the really pretty kick-ass money wins. So let's go ahead and start chatting about some of those. The first money win comes from Kristen. Kristen's one of my private coaching clients, so this really was super cool to me. Her money win, she says, "Today I had a huge win by making the final payment on my HELOC." A HELOC is a home equity line of credit, in case you've never heard of that before. She says, "We started on 1-1. January 1st with a balance of $21,436. And with extra hours and cutting way back on expenses, we just knocked it out in less than 3 months. Whitney has helped tremendously through private money coaching the past several weeks, and I can't thank her enough. Still have a lot of work to do, but definitely feeling $21,000 lighter today. Hashtag money win." Kristen, I am so, so proud of you. You have been killing it. You and Katie both have been amazing. So I think it's really awesome to see what you guys have been doing and all the progress you've been getting. So keep up the great work. I'm so excited to see all of the progress you come up with as well. The next money win comes from Krista, aka Whitney's mom. Yes, this is my mother, and this is an exact text that she sent me. So just giving you a little taste of how my mom is. She says, I just got a wild hair up my butt and went and paid off my car. Hashtag money win. Congrats, mom. I'm really proud of you. I think that's pretty cool. And yes, even my mother, even you guys know my feelings on car payments, but even my mom had a car payment. I mean, just the way it goes sometimes. But congrats, mom and Kristen. I'm very, very proud of both of you. If you guys want to share your money wins with me, make sure you're tagging me on Twitter, on Instagram, or even in the private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, and use hashtag money win for the shout out and the recognition that you so deserve. All right, guys, let's dive into today's episode. Today's guest has been inspiring me since 2015. I am so grateful for the opportunity to chat with Philip Taylor, or as some of you might know him, PT Money. PT is a certified public accountant. He's the creator of FinCon, one of the top conferences personal finance bloggers, podcasters, and creatives go to. He's the host of Masters of Money podcast, which is really incredible. He interviews some people with some really cool money stories that have made some very big strides in the personal finance industry. He is also a blogger at ptmoney.com. Basically, guys, PT is a really big deal in the financial world, so it was tons of fun chatting with him about his journey in life. In this episode, we talk about starting his blog in 2007, his strategy for starting FinCon in 2011, and how he used crowdsourcing to grow the conference from 250 people to over 1,500 people, which is no small feat. The sacrifices that he made to pay off his student loans and debt, and the hilarious story of how he bought a car, realized it was too expensive, and tried to take the car back. It's awesome. I love that story. And towards the end, he shares a very inspiring perspective on taking ownership of your life. So if this is something that you've been struggling with, or you would just like a little bit more inspiration in that area, definitely you're going to love towards the end of this episode. All of this and so much more, guys and gals, I am stoked to introduce you guys to Philip Taylor from PTMoney.com. Thank you guys so much for joining in for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Today, I am joined by an extra special guest and someone that I truly look up to, PT Money. Thank you so much for joining us.
Whitney, it's so good to be here. I'm excited. I'm ready to party.
Heck yeah, we're going to have a digital party here. So, PT, I discovered you when I learned about FinCon. And to be fair, I cannot remember for the life of me how I learned about FinCon. But I remember going, my first year was, I think, 2014. And I walked in thinking, oh my God, like how much fun can personal finance people actually have? And I'll be damned if I had like the best time of my life. It was a blast. And I made so many cool friends and people that I had met on Instagram and all these different connections. How the heck did you create FinCon? Like you've done a great job with this.
Yeah, well, thanks. It's been a lot of fun to be a part of. You know, a couple of evolutions are happening in the world of online personal finance. One is that people are doing it themselves. They're taking it upon themselves to control their own money and take charge of their financial life, right? So they're no longer asking permission from financial institutions or from financial advisors to kind of start taking control of things. At the same time, the internet has made it possible for any of us to get involved in this media game. So to share our messages and share our story with the world. And so that's where I was back in 2007. That's kind of the beginning times for me when I started my PT Money. The fast track to success for me at starting that site was communicating and talking with other people doing the same thing. And so I would meet up with other bloggers. I would invite them to write for my site. We would collaborate. We would just lock arms and say, this is fun, let's all do it together, and we can all make more happen if we just work together. And so, just this community of people who were online talking about personal finance, not afraid of that subject. And, you know, I was, after a couple of years of doing my own site, realizing the power of working with other people doing the same thing, I said, we've got to have our own event. We've got to have our own place for us to come together once a year and talk shop, share ideas, and talk about what's next in personal finance and just have a good time.
I love it. So talk to us about that first event. How many people showed up?
Yeah. So in 2011, we had our first one and we had about 250 folks show up, which blew my mind at the time. I thought maybe 50 people we could get to this deal. But it kind of took on a life of its own. I mean, there's a real energy around the people who aren't afraid to go online and talk about what's happening with their money. There's a real connection that happens there. And so they really wanted to be together. It wasn't because I was some marketing genius or, you know, got the right people involved necessarily. It was just because it was going to happen. This event was really going to happen whether I planned it or not. That's kind of how I see it. So I was lucky enough to throw the first party. So yeah, 250 people showed up, had some excellent speakers, JD Roth, from Get Rich Slowly, Ramit Sethi from I Will Teach You to Be Rich. It was a lot of fun to have those guys who I'd looked up to for years and read their stuff, you know, be a part of my event and speak at it. And, we just had a good time. Everyone, we did what we, you know, you normally think to do at a conference. We had sessions where we learned about things and we had times where we could network and hang out and party together. Some fun parties, even in that first year. So we all left thinking, oh, that was really fun. Like we should do more of that. And so after that, I said, let's do it every year. So it's been an annual conference ever since.
That's amazing. So one of the things I'm always so impressed with is the event planning process. I've planned workshops and I'm not kidding you. Those are like the death of me. So planning a conference sounds like such a cumbersome process. So how did you lift that off the ground for that first one, especially?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, this was really the event I wanted to be a part of. So I leaned heavily on sort of selfishly on what I wanted out of it. And I wanted, for it to be the best it could be. If I'm creating something for myself, I want it to be great. Another thing I did, I think was beneficial, was to involve the people who were going to come to the event. So I really crowdsourced the opportunities. I think this is wise, regardless of what type of business or thing you're creating, is get to the people who are going to pay you to put together that thing and help and allow them to help you come up with the ideas to make it even greater. And so I reached out to the community of people who signed up on the email list to say they would potentially come to start helping me out with the dates we should have it, where we should have it, what kind of speakers we should have, what kind of topics we could cover. I really just allowed the community, the people who were going to be there, to help formulate, you know, what the event was. And so by the time we got there, everyone had ownership, right? Everyone sort of felt like, hey, I kind of helped create this thing, and now I can show up and celebrate and be a part of this thing that I helped create. So that's what I would lean on. That's what I leaned on heavily. I mean, I also spent way too much time doing it. I was just obsessed with it. So I love the idea of doing it. And so I didn't want to fall flat on my face. You know, I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of everyone. So I wanted to do as much as possible to make it a great time. So I obsessed about it, you know, and I looked over the schedule every day, thought about every kind of thing that could go wrong. And I got some help along the way. So I did hire a virtual assistant that year, and Jessica, who's been with me this whole time, is now my full-time employee, was super valuable in helping me kind of put that together. And then also hired a consulting, didn't hire them, but there's consultants out there who will work between you and the hotel for free for you, but will work, you know, getting paid by the hotels to kind of help you navigate like a contract and make sure, you know, you find the right space for your meeting. So that's how it all went down.
That's like a whole new other world. I didn't even realize that. What an interesting job.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super helpful that first year. Like I said, am I supposed to call hotels and negotiate contracts?
What do I say?
And she came along, and it's Carolyn from Helms Briscoe is the company, and she was fantastic and really taking that whole part of it on. And when you would do an event at a hotel, the hotel really does a good job of making you look good and kind of taking over the whole operation. Think about it. I mean, they run events every week, like multiple events every week, and so they're the pros at it. Like, you know, if you can work with a hotel, I think, especially in your first couple of years, it smooths a lot of the bumps over. So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you started FinCon in 2011. You started blogging in about 2007. Mm-hmm. So what made you start the blog? Why did you start ptmoney.com?
Yeah, so I was reading other blogs. So I think all creators reach a point to where they are consumers at first, maybe, but they reach a point to where I've done enough reading, I've done enough researching, I know this subject, and I have my own take on it, right? And so just kind of comes out of you at some point and says, I need to share my message and my piece of this with the world. And so that's where I was in 2007. Plus, I had a corporate job with very little to do and sitting in front of my computer all day. And so, you know, my lifestyle, you know, we didn't have kids yet. So my life sort of allowed for it to be easy. I wanted to be a part of the growth of the internet too. I wanted to participate in the commerce that was happening on the internet. But most importantly, and I think this was the key to it, was that personal finance was my passion, and I needed a place to record my successes and to hold myself accountable, set goals, and to position or to put those things out there into the world so that then I would achieve them, then I could see I had done them and then move myself forward. So it was really a huge accountability thing for me.
I think that's so smart. And that's how a lot of people start, is sharing their own journey, finding that little passion, that spark. And it may not be what you're currently doing in your day job even, but it's finding something and what's your unique take on it. So I think that was really smart of you, and great timing too with the internet. Man, that's awesome that you were part of watching it grow and seeing how it impacted blogs and personal finance. And I think it's fascinating. So you mentioned that you have kids now. So how many kids do you have, and are you married?
Yeah, married with three kids. They are 7, 5, and 2.
Oh, they're little.
Little guys. Yeah.
All boys? Or
two girls and a boy now.
Okay, okay. So what kinds of stuff are you teaching them about personal finance now?
Oh, that's good. It's funny. My daughter, when she 2 years ago when she was in kindergarten, she got one needs improvement area of her report card, and it was the distinguishing wants from needs. I was like, what? Her dad's like personal finance guy. That's the one thing she needs help with. So I'm not sure we've done a great job, but what we try to do is show them as much as possible what we're doing with our money, I guess, is probably a good way to do it, and talk to them and not put shields up or put blinders up to what's going on in our financial lives. So we talk to them about it. If we're buying something, we talk about maybe where the money came from, or if I'm working, you know, we talk about why I'm working, or, we try to be open and honest, I guess, about everything that we're doing. Not put anything in a category where it's like, well, we can't talk to the kids about that because that's a money thing, or we don't want to make them worry because it's a money thing, or we don't separate those two. We try to allow them to come into our world in that. Another thing we're going to do, and we haven't really started it yet, but I want to do this, is to give them a salary. So I'm of the opinion that the best way for kids to learn about money is, I'm convinced that it's the best way to learn about money is to allow them to start using money as soon as possible. And so we're going to give them a salary. It's not based on any kind of chores or it's essentially the equivalent of what their disposable income needs to be. So for things like, buying a snack at the grocery store, if they want something extra. So all those moments in life where your kids would ask you for something like, Dad, can I have this? Like, yes, you can. And you have now money to do that with. And so they're going to have that money and they're going to be able to make those decisions, whether they're, you know, buying that little thing or they're saving it for the future or, you know, whatever. So we just want to put them in the give them the tools to be in practice of using money, because we feel like we want them to make those mistakes now. Right. I want my kids to royally screw up with money right now versus when they're 18 and they're going into college and then they're first exposed to money and they're making those mistakes then. So that's my philosophy, I guess, is to try to allow them to participate as much as possible in money so that they can make all the stupid mistakes now and kind of figure things out now. That way, then when it actually becomes important or vastly important in the future, they'll have it figured out.
I think that's so smart, too, because you see so many kids that grow up, and I'm a millennial myself, and millennials have this like total stigma that they're so entitled and they're so this and this. And I think that a lot of that it's from family. I mean, it's taught in a lot of ways. If you grow up not being told how to manage money or showed how to manage money, you're never going to know. And so I appreciate that you're working on that with the kids, because I think it's such a crucial part.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think it's multiple generations now who have come out of adolescence with, you know, a lot of ignorance about money. And that's a shame, you know, and that's something I feel like in the future we can start busting down, you know, that shame and just start opening up conversations and allowing parents and kids to talk more about it. But it starts, I think, with the parents becoming financially knowledgeable, because no one wants to talk about their money if it's a mess. And parents don't want to talk about it with their kids if it's a total mess. I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a challenge.
So it sounds like, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, it looks like you've got everything together with your financial life. But I know that's not always the case. We always start from square one. So can you take us back to that day when you were trying to figure out, what the heck am I doing with money? Where do I go to learn this stuff? Paint us that picture of where you were.
Yeah. So I left college with a accounting degree. My dad's a CPA. I'm going for my CPA. And I have credit card debt. I have student loan debt. And I'm not making progress with my financial life. So I took my first job out of college. I think it was $33,000. And I immediately went and bought a $30,000 SUV.
Oh, no.
on a probably 12% interest loan. You know, so I completely blew my budget. Now I have, sure, a high insurance payment, a big mortgage or a big car, you know, payment, and I had this salary, and I just thought, man, I got to reward myself, you know, with this car. And, you know, it wasn't a couple of weeks later where I realized there's no way I was going to manage this whole thing. So embarrassingly, I called the car dealership up and said, hey guys, can you take the car back? I don't want to do this anymore. And the guy's like, no, like, that's the end of it. See you, pal. And such, so embarrassing. I called my dad. I was like, Dad, can you help me out? Like, is there a way out of this? You know? And my dad, in his magical ways, I don't know, worked it out to where I could, take the car back if I lost the deposit, which is $1,000. So I ended up doing that. And long-term, I'm glad I did that, you know, 'cause it saved me, you know, probably getting the car repoed at some point or just never making real advance or being sort of owned to this car like in the future. So that was kind of a big turning point for me. And I worked to get rid of my debt after that point, my credit card debt. living just living below my means. So I went back and got my old car. So I avoided having a car payment in my life. I stayed at really cheap, apartments. I tried to bank all my money and throw all that excess at the credit card debt till I was out of it. And so just basically becoming, I called it hardcore frugal, when I go back and look at it, and just trying to make advances, toward my financial future. So, yeah.
So what was, in your opinion, the biggest sacrifice for you when you were trying to pay off debt? Was it the car or was it something else?
It was probably the apartment, the cheap apartment felt like a little bit of a sacrifice for me. I don't know. Ultimately it wasn't that big of a deal, but I was staying in like the cheapest places in Dallas and, not sleeping on a mattress on the floor kind of stuff, not buying the bed frame yet or not buying even the metal frame to put the, put the mattress upon. I don't know. And I felt like security at that point, I had already established that security was more important for me. And so everything paled in comparison to that security. I floundered a little bit at post college with some different jobs, and that $33,000 job didn't last very long. I just wasn't really happy there. And, so ultimately it came down to financial security for me, that I wanted that in my life. I wanted to not have to depend on someone else and not have to worry about money. And so anything that was moving me in the direction of independence and financial peace was good for me. Like, so it was not much that I felt like I was ultimately, I guess, sacrificing at that point.
That's interesting. So at that time too, when you were trying to pay off all the student loans and getting rid of the car, did you know that entrepreneurship was going to be in your future?
I'd always kind of felt like I needed to do something on my own. So in my career in accounting, I'd mostly worked for big firms or little firms or in the corporate world. And so in the back of my mind, I thought, man, it's kind of a bummer to go into work for the man every day, and I wish I had something where I could really be doing the work that I wanted to do versus what someone else wanted to do. So maybe a little bit of an inkling in my mind. And I think when I started the blog in 2007, there was probably a little bit of, this could maybe be my thing at some point, because I'd seen some other bloggers do it and other people in the space make that their living. So, I've always kind of felt like that there was going to be something out there for me where I could call my own shots.
I love that. I think you're touching on a couple really cool points there that I want to dig into a little bit deeper. And the first one is you talked about making your living off of the blog, and you saw other people blogging and they were doing it. And so many people today think that you cannot make money blogging. They just think that it's not a business. So what's your philosophy or your take on that?
Yeah, so you can make money just about doing anything. So if you put your mind to it and you do enough hard work around it. So blogging is just another thing. I mean, all it is really helping people with information and then pairing yourself up with advertisers or creating your own products and services to then further help that person reading your stuff. So that's kind of the simplified version of what I think it is. So if you're really good at helping people, if you're really good at answering a lot of the right questions, then you're going to get a lot of eyeballs on those answers. And if you get a lot of eyeballs on those answers, usually you can get those people looking at, a product or service that you have or working with an advertiser that you're, pairing your stuff up with. So I'm bullish on it. I see a lot of people come into our space even now who are just starting within a year, become someone who's doing this on a full-time level, mm-hmm. So it's possible. It's always kind of an evolving space. So in the way I made money with PT Money early on was mostly through affiliate marketing, and it's become more and more of a challenge, I think, to make money in affiliate marketing, particularly for the financial vertical. But not to say it can't be done, and there are still people coming up on the scene doing it every day. Mm-hmm. But there's so many different ways to make money once you get the eyeballs, once you get people there checking out your stuff, and once you get consumers in the door. There's lots of avenues to do it, whether that's, a face-to-face event, holding your own events, or whether it's doing digital workshops or digital product services or creating an app or whatever it is. I mean, if you've got the eyeballs there, then you can make something happen.
So I think a lot of times people have this, like, this imposter syndrome, and I'm sure you went through that too, of who am I to be telling people this kind of advice? I don't have it all figured out myself. I know some things, but I'm not perfect. And we just, all this negative self-talk that we go through every day. So if somebody does have a website, how do they know if it's good enough to start reaching out to advertisers? That's a loaded question too, I know.
Yeah. That's a tough one. So I mean, I don't necessarily think there's a bad time to start reaching out to advertisers. So, you know, if your site is a narrow enough niche and speaks directly to a particular audience that the advertiser just so happens to be marketing to, and you see that, like, for instance, what's the number one keyword on your site? So if it's how to start a Roth IRA, right? Mm-hmm. So let's Google that and that's my number one keyword. I have the best article on how to start a Roth IRA, right? Well, who's advertising on Google above or below on that keyword, right? What company is doing that? I mean, that's the first company you should probably be reaching out to try to work with, because they're also going after that same person, you know, with their message. So why should you guys not be in business together, you know, trying to serve that same consumer if they're a good product or service, right? So look at the people your audience is already attracting, even if it's a small audience, and then go after the targeted advertisers that are in that same, that are playing in that same space. So that's what I would say up front, because there's no influential marketing is something that a billboard or a banner ad or, you know, a clicking ad can never compete with. It can never compete with me, Philip Taylor, saying, I use this, I like this, you should do it too. Like, that's super powerful. And that's something we all have. We all have the capability to be an influencer like that. And so, you know, find what it is that you're influencing people on. And then, and if you're not yet, figure out why. Why aren't you being influential? Is it because they don't trust you yet? Is it because your stuff's not good enough yet? Work on those two things. Mm-hmm. Work on trust and bring quality. And then, you know, you'll start being influential in that area. Another thing I do or focus on is when I'm having doubts is just try to marry it up or try to, you know, ask my peers. So I look to people around me who are doing a similar thing, and I talk to them about what's working, what's not working, and just sort of rely on my community I have around me to kind of help me overcome that doubt like that, you know.
I love that. And I think there's so many different ways to make money, and you're exactly right. So all of us have some type of skill. It might not be personal finance. It might be crocheting. It might be traveling. Like, there's so many different little niches that you can get into. So I love that. And then you mentioned the importance of community. And I couldn't agree more. I think you've got to have people that get it. And anymore, community is so much easier to come by than I think it was back in like the 70s. It's like, you can just reach out to people on Facebook and say, yo, hey, I'm this person. This is what I'm working on. Happy to connect with you. Like, it's really that easy. I think it's so fascinating.
Yep. The barrier to entry is really low, you know, for us to all get involved in meeting the world, connecting with as many folks as we, you know, but that only means, because that barrier to entry is so low, that means the quality needs to keep stepping up. And so that's a good thing ultimately. So, you know, just make sure that you're not sacrificing quality, with what you're doing, because that's more and more important.
I totally agree. Especially in today's world, it's hard sometimes too, because we always hear the advice from like the Grant Cardones, where it's like, you just push content out there. It doesn't matter what you're doing right now. Video, snap it out there.
Yeah.
And so it's, you get that, and then you get other people that are like, no, you should write great quality content. And so it's always so funny, because you hear both sides all the time.
Yeah. You hear the Gary Vee is the same way. It's like day trade attention, you know, but he's also got an army of people putting out content for him. Right. Mm-hmm. One other thing I wanted to mention on this subject, the imposter syndrome, was that when I started in 2007, the same thoughts that people might have that prevent them from starting today, I was having in my own mind. So I thought, I said this to myself, there's already too many personal finance bloggers. In 2007, I said that, even though, and I started anyway, you know, so I still did it. And so just to give people perspective, like I had those same, some of those same doubts and fears back then. So I still think I'm really bullish on do-it-yourself personal finance. I think that space will only explode. And I'm really, really bullish on the internet as being a medium where we all can be creators who are then rewarded for our creativity and the stuff we put out.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think it's super interesting. So when you talk about DIY personal finance people, so tell us a little bit about what that actually means for you.
Yeah. So in the past, we almost needed permission by a financial guru or a bank, a particular bank or institution or a financial advisor, the people who are smart, quote unquote, smart with money, you know, to help us with our financial life. And so we could divorce ourselves then from being knowledgeable about that subject. We could say, oh, that's for the experts, or that's for the institutions, or that's somebody's handling that for me. Like, I think more and more people are realizing that that old model has not worked. You know, that that has led to some negative paths for people. And so I think more and more people just realize they need to take it upon themselves to manage their own money, to at a minimum understand, you know, the basics of their investments and what they're doing there. And most people, once they specifically on the investing side, once they see, you know, hey, this active person who's supposed to be managing this stuff for me, it's not necessarily going to beat what I could do on a passive level on my own in a diversified portfolio with the tools that are available for me today over a 40-year period. Yeah. Like nothing's going to really beat that. So that's bringing a lot of people into the game, you know, that considered themselves maybe excluded from it in the past. So that's what I mean by that, is that I just think that for consumers, for the stats we always read about how people don't save enough or how people aren't blah, blah, blah. I mean, the revolution that's going to take to change those numbers is going to be people sensing, taking ownership of their own financial life. And so that's, to me, is the evolution that we're experiencing. And you can see it at FinCon. We started it with 250 people back in 2011. Now we have over 1,500 people that are going to be in Dallas this fall. And so these are all people who have taken ownership of their life and chosen to broadcast that to the rest of the world. And so I just feel this, I feel this evolution happening in the online world, and it excites me. You know, I feel like it's at some point it's going to pop and have like an overwhelming influence.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're spot on. And this ownership piece is so critical for people to realize that no one's going to do this stuff for you. And I'm really passionate about women taking control of their money, because I see so many women that think their husband, their wife, I mean, whoever they're married to, it doesn't matter. They think somebody else is going to cover this for them. And that's the biggest mistake ever, because you don't know. You hope that you don't outlive your spouse, but you just don't know. And so it's such a touchy subject for me.
Yeah, yeah. Super important for the ladies to get involved in their own stuff, because society even more so than, or, you know, I'm a man, so society tells me, hey, man, go make your own way. Like society oftentimes has told woman, hey, find a man to help you make your own way, you know, and that's a bad message financially. If you take that to its, you know, ends, that can be a dangerous message to tell women versus men. So I'm in agreement. Take ownership and know what's happening in your financial life. So
totally, totally. And I think it's so interesting. Like my mom got divorced when she'd been married for 27 years, and it was not a great marriage, but the reason she was in there and stayed with this marriage for so long was because of money, because she didn't have the financial resources to leave. And so I remember seeing that like when I was like 16 and thinking, what the crap? Like money's a big deal. This stuff matters. And so that's when it really made a big impact for me. So tell me your story. Like, when did you realize that money mattered? It was a big deal for your life.
I would say probably the most impactful time where I felt like it mattered was when I got married. Because I was dabbling in personal finance before that point. But when I got married, I felt the responsibility of my wife and a future family. And so I sort of saw myself 20 years down the line thinking, okay, how do I want where I'm at to be, you know, different, you you know, greatly different, you know, 20 years down the line. I read David Bach's Automatic Millionaire that year, and I discovered the power of automating my savings. That's had a huge impact over the last 10 years. And I talk about it on my site, how the last 10 years I've been able to save consistently on average about 20% of our income toward retirement savings. And so automatic savings, I contribute 100% like to us, you know, achieving that goal. And so that's been huge. When I say automate, I mean, like, before it comes in your checking account, have it deposited into a savings account or your Roth IRAs or what other savings tools you have, and then keep it separate, keep it in that separate place where it's not easy for you to grab hold. Do that. Start it today. And even if you start with $5, $10, $25 a month, if you get yourself in the habit of setting that on automating it, you'll see in 6 months, oh man, I was able to save a ton by just doing this little piece and then not worrying about it. So why don't we crank that up maybe a little bit and maybe go for $75, $100 next month. And then it just perpetuates itself. You know, you constantly see the power of the automation and how things are working, you know, kind of in the background without your help and without you having to pay attention. Because we're human at the end of the day. I'm a spender. I'm a natural spender.
Are you?
You know, give me a pile of cash, I'll figure out, I'm heading to Vegas. We're going to have some fun. But if you took that 20% off the top, I'd be just as happy with that, whatever was left, that 80%, and I'd still spend it and have fun, and then I'd stop, you know. But it's that 20% that I'm already paying myself first with that's made the biggest difference in my financial life.
So I'm sure you've came across this, because I know I've come across this way too many freaking times, where people are just saying, that sounds great, I would love to, that's perfect, but I don't have any money, I can't afford to do that. What kind of advice do you have for that type of person?
Well, I mean, on one hand, you're talking to the guy who lived in a $400 a month rent apartment and who drove a used, you know, Saturn two-door car for 6 or 7 years of his life. So I don't necessarily have a lot of sympathy for people who say they can't reduce their expenses. I mean, for the most part, most college-educated folks in the United States with a decent job can afford pretty much just about anything they want, really. On second hand, like, you know, I believe there are expenses in our life we could trim. Okay, but if you certainly can only trim that to a point, right? So say your expenses every month are $1,500. All right, so the maximum you could probably take that down to is, let's say, $1,000. So you've saved $500 a month. Good. Like, start putting that $500 a month into your savings or some type of goal. That's a big chunk. But then once you establish that, you're not going to be able to take that $1,000 down to zero. Like, there's diminishing returns with your ability to reduce your expenses in your life. So once you kind of have that set, then start focusing on bringing in more income in your life, whether that be increasing your education, trying to get a raise, or starting a side hustle of some sort, doing something on the side, or starting a business on the side. So those are kind of the things you need to be thinking about and shifting your mind toward at some point. The biggest advances in my financial progress have come when I've freed myself of debt, freed myself of financial worry, created independence in my life, then was able to create businesses that have drastically propelled my financial success. So starting the website, now running the conference, those two things have been very instrumental in me, like, creating, like, true wealth for myself. So I could have still been getting ahead and still been in a good space, but no one was telling me, hey, with PT Money, you can only take it from $40,000 a month of income to $45,000 a month of income. There's no limit. No one was telling me that other than the market. So I have the power to take that from 45 to whatever I wanted it to be. And so that's the difference between the income side and the expense side. So at some point, start focusing on that income and figuring out ways to ramp them up.
I love it. I think you're spot on. You can only reduce so much. And I think most people should reduce for the most part, because you can always increase your lifestyle, but keeping that lifestyle as low as you possibly can, spending on what you truly value and getting some type of side hustle, man, maybe it's like waitressing. You're doing something on the side to make extra money. That is so critical. So I appreciate you sharing that and how that's impacted your own personal life too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about, I notice now you're still a CPA, you're still certified, however, you're not working in public accounting. Was that because of burnout or just because you saw a better opportunity?
No, when I left, I left to go blog full time in 2010. At the time, I was working in corporate finance, so I was still using my CPA, but not in a public way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would do a few tax returns for my dad's practice every year, just friends and family and stuff. But for the most part, I was just keeping the CPA, just to kind of have the credentials around. I wasn't practicing publicly. So I've kept that. I paid the fees every year to keep that. I like having that, you know, certification. Being a CPA, either having my own practice or working in a corporation, just wasn't for me. And so I'm glad I have those credentials because they taught me a lot about investing for retirement and taxes that I would not have otherwise known just coming into the personal finance space, alone. So I haven't practiced publicly probably since 2010 or so. Yeah. And so I took the blog full time in 2010. And that became my business. And haven't looked back.
I love that.
I don't know if I answered your question or not, but
No, I think you did. It's like you found something else that you were more interested in that was fun and new and really kind of lit you up. So you just went for that full time.
Yeah, I was totally a geek about personal finance blogging. And so I couldn't help but tell everyone I knew about what I was doing and told my wife. She got so sick of hearing about it, which is probably one of the big reasons I started FinCon, so I could actually sit and talk to people who really cared about it like I did. I was lucky enough to find this as a passion. And whether it made money or whether it became a business, you know, ultimately, I would still be glad I did it, you know. Yeah. So I just followed that, you know, what I cared about doing. And luckily, my finances, I was fixing them at the same time. And so by the time I left to go blog full time, 2010, my wife and I had been living on one of our incomes. So we had paid off all of our student loans, both of our car loans. And we had saved up a big emergency fund. And like I said, we had made big improvements in what we were doing with our retirement investing too. So we were in a good spot. I was in a spot to where I could say, you know, screw you guys. I'm going to go do my own thing. Like I could get by 6-12 months really without anyone telling me what to do with my life. And so if you want to be able to make a similar call, then you get those finances fixed. Because I'm too risk averse, right? I'm a chicken, total chicken. I need my job. I need my paycheck. I mean, that's really how I am. But like, had I not got to a point to where I said, well, maybe I don't need the paycheck or I don't need that, you know, I never would have done it. And so that's my word of advice in that department is fix those finances. Then you can, whatever decision it is, whether it's traveling full time with your family, whether it's taking a year off or whatever it is, like you'll be able to do it because you can call the shot.
I love that. I think that's some dang good advice too. So let's a couple final questions before we officially wrap up. So what is a project that you're working on now that you're really excited about?
Yeah, I'm doing a podcast. It's a lot like yours. It was inspired a lot by your show, where I sit and I talk with financial pros or what I'm calling masters of money, who have done some cool things with their money and so they're not scared to showcase their experiments and the things that have gone right, and things that have gone wrong, and how their stories have led to success. And so that's in iTunes now at Masters of Money. It's a lot of fun. And it's a privilege to be able to do it. I mean, we have all kinds of people on the show, people who are like expert minimalists who talk about how they, you know, keep their money, manage their money as a minimalist. We have people on the show talking about how they've gotten rid of debt, how they've started side hustles to create financial independence in their life. So all kinds of cool stories.
I think that's so cool. And I personally am a big fan of what you're up to and the podcast. And I know we've had conversations about podcasting and it's so needed. People really need to hear these awesome stories. So I hope everybody goes and checks out the podcast. It'll be linked in the show notes, of course. So PT, where can people go to learn more about you and connect with you personally?
Yeah, please do. PTmoney.com. You can email me, PT@PTmoney.com, or hit me up on Twitter. I'm real responsive there @PTmoney.
Awesome. So. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Whitney. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, what'd you guys think? I love this episode. I thought it was really cool to hear his perspective of starting a conference, starting a blog, both of which can be a little bit difficult. So I thought it was really awesome that he was able to get both of those successfully off the ground and create a really cool life out of it. Very, very interesting stuff. The part about this episode that really stuck out to me was kind of this talk of ownership and making sure that you are taking full responsibility for your life and your financial choices and your career choices and pretty much all of that stuff. I thought that was really great. And I think we need to be a little bit more conscientious about that stuff. You know, it's so easy to just put the blame on someone else. We can't do this because of XYZ situation. But really being able to step back and say, you know what, I'm responsible for my own success and my own failure. And that is a really empowering feeling. So I appreciated his perspective on that. Guys, if you have enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, and download some of the other episodes as well. And also, if you have liked this interview with PT, go check out his podcast, Masters of Money. You can find that at ptmoney.com, and there's a little tab where you can click on podcast to listen in. Make sure you do that too. His episodes are great. He has really great quality. Audio quality is really good. The guests are amazing. I find a lot of inspiration from his podcast as well. All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening in, and I will see you guys next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye for now.